Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hey, hello.
How's it going, Derek?
It's going good. Going good.
Ice storm.
Yes, ice storm. So we get...
We got rain.
So we have lake effect because we're so close. The storm picks up the moisture and the heat of the lake, and we get rain. So the day of the ice storm, I remember waking up and looking out the window, and there's some little tiny icicles on the clothesline and a little frosting on the
trees.
We
didn't even get that.
We had just tiny bit, and I thought, well, it's a good thing nobody panicked over this.
Right.
And then I started seeing social media. It's like, oh.
Yes, north of us.
Mm-hmm.
West of us.
Well, I've got people.
East of us.
There's people at my work who are still home because they had to call out. They said, I've got no power. I had to do a 20-minute drive just to get this cell signal. My basement, I have to keep a generator running to keep the sump pump going. I don't know when power's going to come back.
And
The heavy rain means that there's a lot of water in the ground. So they're like, there's at least three people I know at work who are currently at home fueling generators to keep their sumps dry, to keep the water out of the house. So running generators. One guy, he came in today. He said, at 2 a.m., bing, lights came on. So he's like, oh, well, I can't just leave the generator still running. So he said he got up and unplugged all the fridges from the generator, plugged them back in the wall, slid them all back into place, loaded the dishwasher, yada, yada, yada. So at 2 in the morning, he's like doing dishes and plugging fridges back in. And fortunately, he said the power stayed back on. But yeah, it's like... there's a couple guys that like every 15 minutes their sump pump runs because there's so much water sliding into the house. And yeah. I'm thinking, I don't even have a sump pump in my house.
Yeah. No, we just got rain. That was it.
Do you have a sump?
Nope.
No sump.
No.
So how does your water drain out if you were to get water?
There's a hole in the floor.
We do too. We have a drain, and it's where the furnace and air conditioning, all the moisture
no
that comes
that.
From that drain line. So we have one of those. It's got a little check valve in it. I have to clean once in a while. But yeah, and we're up on a hill-ish, but there's no sump. It's just a small floor drain. Like
yeah, it goes up to the curb.
Yeah.
Into the sewer.
You're pretty level flat here, though.
Yeah, but we're underground.
No, I mean... There'd be a lot of opportunity for water levels to raise. You're not on a hill.
We're not near a lake either.
I'm not near a lake. There's a lot of people not near lakes, but if you're in an area where there's groundwater, right?
No, that's below us. We made sure.
Smart ass. My parents, they have a, it's about a 200-year-old, farmhouse. And, every spring, when the spring melt, we had a little stream that would run through the basement.
Really?
All year long, a little stream of water, because we had a mountain behind us. And so it would come out like
Did you live in a cave?
No.
You sure?
But it's a natural spring that rolled right through the basement. And so...
Well, that was bad planning on whoever built that house, wasn't it?
Can I tell my story?
Not until you get rid of that river creek lake thing in your basement.
So anyways, like it would be July, August by the time the little stream would dry up. And they'd have a couple months of dryness. And winter, obviously, it wasn't running. But in the spring, it was like a 6-inch drain that went out into the front lawn. Because we're on a hill and the street's about 50 feet below grade. So there's a hill below us. And so, but in spring, if like leaves or anything got caught in the drain inside the house, we'd be like, oh, there's 2 feet in the water in the basement again, you know, and then we'd have to crawl down there and get on our hands and knees in the water and pull the whatever is blocking the ground drain, right? So it was, it's an old farmhouse. It's like old fieldstone, gravel floor.
No one ever thought of like diverting the water or...
There was no way to do it. Dad looked at ways to do it and...
build a second wall outside the main wall?
The well they drilled? Wicked water. Like, there's never a shortage of water.
Really?
Yeah.
Moving?
You'd have to move the whole house.
Like they do that now.
You'd have to... Because it's groundwater, right? And it's mostly a stone mountain behind my parents' house. And so any water would just run along the rock underneath... And there's,
You say it's over 100 years old?
It's over 200.
So this has been going on for over 200 years?
Yeah.
This little
stream. It dries up late summer and winter. We used to play in it, build sandcastles in the basement.
Go boating? Is that where you, is that where you picked we up did.
Canoeing? We had little boats down there. Yeah. Our G.I. Joes would have battles around the stream, and we'd build bridges. And
wow.
It was awesome.
Never had that opportunity.
Yeah.
My basements are always dry, just how I like them.
Well, this was mostly dry.
No, I don't want mostly. We had full on dry.
There's banks on this stream. It would be a rocky trench for the water to get out through the drain.
So if you knew where it was coming in, why didn't you just put a tube there, like a pipe, straight through, and then bury it?
Well, the whole floor, the water was coming from a large 15-foot section, like, and it would gather together into this stream. The whole ground would like be saturated. Under the basement, under the foundation.
I would have just buried in my...
I'm sure my dad...
My basement at that point.
For the last 200... Like, it was built in 1830s, 1840s or something. I'm sure in that time, if nobody figured it out, it wasn't figure-outable.
Did they not tell them this when they bought the house?
No, they were aware of it.
And they still bought the house.
Oh, yeah. It's a nice house. 300 acres of woodlot, man.
In your own private lake, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it was neat. It was, that's a deep embedded memory of the, occasionally every second or third spring, if dad wasn't cautious, we'd have a lake in the basement.
This house comes with its own water feature.
Exactly. Yeah, it was neat.
I guess it all depends on how you sell the house.
As a kid, it was fun. Like, we had a blast in the basement. It was so fun.
You could have an indoor ice rink if you played cards, right?
Yeah, I don't think you wanted to get that cold in the basement. All the plumbing and stuff down there.
Bah! just drill that one hole in the bottom.
Yeah.
Once the ice freezes, you're good.
Yeah, it was neat. It was really interesting. It's, I don't know. It was just normal for us. My whole life, I was 1 year old when they bought that house in 1969, and it was just a fact of life. There's going to be water in the basement in the spring.
So never go in the basement in the spring.
Oh, we kept all the firewood down there and
frogs, mosquitoes,
mom had fish. Mom had her giant wall of preserves with mason jars full of like vegetables and you name it, and a couple freezers and.
So was it actual spring water?
Yeah, it was a natural spring coming off the mountain. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. It was interesting. I don't think we ever drank from it because we had a well.
Wow, that's a pretty deep subject.
You had to put the pump that pumped from the well into the tank that supplied the house. We had to keep it on bricks and patio stones high up because we didn't want it to be buried in the water in the spring in case we didn't get the drain unplugged in time.
Right. The things you learn.
I know. Yeah.
You country bumpkin. You're a country bumpkin. Anyway, when it came to ice storms, we had rain.
Yes. There was a lot of rain on Sunday.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And
misty too.
We were recording on Tuesday and... Currently, the forecast is a whole lot of rain, flood warnings, freezing rain warnings. So we'll see if that comes to pass.
Yeah, I won't down here. We don't get
it. No, we'll just
get a lot. We rarely get the good storms.
The good storms.
Yeah.
Our life's rarely at risk.
Yeah. When was the last time you saw a hurricane or a typhoon come through here?
That's true.
Right?
Goddard gets
I want big earthquakes, damn it.
Yeah, we don't get enough of that.
No.
What is it? Malaysia?
Yeah, they just had a big one, eh?
Yeah, 7.7.
Yeah.
I saw the NASA videos that showed the movement of the Earth because there's hundreds and thousands of little sensors. And so I watched the wave of the shock wave go underneath North America.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed, because you're talking like, you know, eighth of a millimeter movement or less, any movement that you wouldn't even notice, and these sensors are detecting. It was like really neat to watch it. Hmm. This wave of pass over or under North America. It was neat. Science.
We're going to get all science-y today. Ice storms and earthquakes and seismic activity.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we're very seismically stable here.
Yes. Yes. They say there's earthquakes every so often and then usually come from northern Quebec.
Yeah, northern Quebec. So anywhere's north, the shield is very stable, but where the lakes go into the shield, there it is unstable there. And there's a couple fissures going up through Quebec. In New Brunswick, I remember the biggest we ever had was like a 4.1 or something. I can still remember it. It's like it kind of gives you the impression that a dump truck passed by the house outside going fast. It's like, what was that? Was that a truck? So, but nothing. I've never been anything big. Times. My brother lives out west of Vancouver Island, and he's waiting for the big one to sink the island.
Well, Ariana over in Japan is going. My friends down south Japan felt earthquakes.
Yeah.
But we've not had anything up here.
It's fairly stable in the north end of the island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Who knows? We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, not too much has happened.
It's not. Yeah. There's not a lot of activity. It's kind of hard to research for the show, as a matter of fact. But there's a lot of other stuff that kind of drowns out the fun stuff. So. But does the dog want out?
Yes.
You keep talking. I'll let the dog out.
All righty. Well, I'm going to talk about something that I've been talking about for the last little while. It's difficult to reduce screen time, interact with those around us in less distracted, more meaningful ways, and free ourselves from dependence on devices.
She's giving me the side eye. I let her out, but I didn't follow, so she stopped and looked at me. She's like, aren't you coming too?
Right. So freeing yourself from different devices, like the tech, right? I've been talking about that a lot. And Washington's San Juan Islands Outdoor Odyssey Sea Kayaking is launching an effort to help people disconnect from technology by doing what they know best, connecting them with nature. I feel like I've done talks on this.
I think you have.
Our relationship with our devices and screens feel like adding a layer of glass between us and our immediate environment. We all could use an occasional break from having the universe at our fingertips and be more present, says Tom Murphy, longtime guide turned owner of Outdoor Odysseys. For families who want their children to spend less time on devices, a professional who works with their coworkers via Zoom, those experiencing the constant barrage of notifications and scrolling that demands our attention, an Outdoor Odysseys trip can be a way to more genuinely connect with the outdoors while removing the distractions and demands of technology. Does this sound familiar yet?
It does. It does.
Vaguely?
It does. Yeah. But my immediate idea and thought is if I'm going kayaking in San Juan Islands and off Washington State, and I'm going to hand over my phone so that I can participate in this, who's going to take pictures of the killer whales and the seals?
Well, you can bring your regular camera.
I don't have one.
You better buy one then. Or nobody's taking pictures of the whales.
But a camera is technology.
Yeah, but it's not this kind of technology. It's not internet and data and connection from the outside world. Recent research from Pew Research Center found that 62% of adults aged 18 to 29 said they are almost constantly online.
True.
Yes. I honestly would move that above 29. I would put that closer to 40 at least.
It, a lot of people are, and I see it at work. I see it outside. I see it like a lot of people do spend, and it's the culture we're in right now, and it's pushed on us by social media and I guess TikTok gets the blame because it's like all these 30-second little videos and now it's on YouTube and Instagram
and all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the San Juan Islands archipelago is widely considered one of the world's most diverse and stunning marine sanctuaries and was recently named Lonely Planet's number one place in the world to experience the phenomenon of bioluminescence. Outdoor Odysseys is encouraging people to be more present by rewarding guests who elect to place their devices in a secure dry box for the duration of any outfitter's full and half-day guided tours. offering in the form of a 10% discount at checkout on their classic day tours using the code ANALOG25. The principle behind the Analog Adventure offering is simple. It's a nominal but meaningful incentive to get people to be more mindful of their attachments to technology and encourage them to rethink the ways they interact with nature and each other. While the discount may only apply to the company's full and half-day tours in 2025, plans are already underway to expand the program to include Outdoor Odyssey's overnight trips.
Ooh.
A multi-day digital detox tour is being piloted later this summer, with plans to launch it as a potential tour in 2026. Could you imagine a multi-day tour with no phone, no internet?
Well, I do that all the time.
But not everybody does.
No, not everybody does. It's true.
I know people that cannot put their phone down.
Yeah?
It is on their person 24/7. And if they don't have their phone, they've got the Apple Watch or the Fitbit or some sort of smart device.
Gotta get my steps in.
Yeah. They've got something that they are able to connect to others.
But we're so digitally connected currently. Like, everybody is digitally connected. It's it's hard to find anybody who's not. There are some people out there that do stay disconnected. My old boss, she doesn't have social media. Her phone is for work only, and she'll text people and get texts, but she doesn't have an Instagram account, no Facebook account and stuff like that. So she is fairly disconnected.
Yep.
So it's interesting to, and she says she doesn't notice any lack or loss of any
contact. I've gotten in the habit of leaving my phone different places.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll go upstairs and change after work, leave my phone up there.
Yeah, I do too.
And then, you know, like 3 hours later, what did I do with my phone?
I know, yeah.
It's not that you need it. It's just that, ooh, I think I put that upstairs.
Yeah.
It's just like a set of keys at that point. Where did I put my keys?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where did I put my phone? Right? My wallet. Yeah. So, it gets to the point where I don't need the phone anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I have it because work pays for it. And,
yeah.
You know, I do a lot of my work on the phone as opposed to having to go to my office and turn the computer on or something. Yeah. But
I think the key thing is, and I do enjoy this, especially with it, because like my kids are so, like, Beckett plays all his games. Like, it's funny, he's like 11, and so he has a couple laptops, like his old one plus his current one. His old one is just a clunky, broken thing, but it's good enough for him to talk to his buddies. So
right?
He'll play games on one and have the other one set up next to him, and he'll have one or two of his buddies on a video or audio chat. And so when I came home from work today, it was on at the dining room table, two laptops out in front of him, and he was chatting on one and playing a game on another, and it's like, whoa, what's going on over
there? I'll set up my phone in front of my computer at work,
yeah.
And while I'm doing my actual real work, in the mornings now, every couple days, my daughter and I sit there and we FaceTime each other.
Yeah.
So we have his, because she's 13 hours ahead, right?
Yeah.
So while I'm getting ready for work in the morning, do my morning stuff, she's finished doing whatever her activity in the evening was. And, you know, she's just settling down before she goes to bed for the night. And we just have a quick chat, catch up on things. And
so it is good for that.
Yeah.
But I also like getting the kids out. And when we do go into Tomogamy or into Algonquin, there's no signal.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not, well, we obviously wouldn't bring a laptop or a tablet or anything
But the phones and...
The phone does come because of photos. I take photos.
Yeah.
So, but there's no other...
Photos and the journal.
Yes, making notes.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I was never good at doing paper notes.
Oh, I used to, but they...
I have so many notebooks. And yeah, exactly. But yeah, so it's nice to disconnect, to have that that feeling of being disconnected. And I always played with the idea of being disconnected, and it's like, you know, the world could be ending right now and I'd never know it.
Well, look how many people came back from interior trips and stuff in COVID.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, whoa, what's going on here?
That was a big thing. People were doing these massive, like, month-long trips and came out to COVID.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? You're kidding, right? No.
Yeah.
No, not kidding.
Yeah.
So, for more information or to book an Outdoor Odyssey sea kayaking trip, visit outdooroddysseys.com. or email paddle@outdooroddysseys.com for more info. Outdoor Odysseys, founded in 1987, been providing unique half, full, and multi-day sea kayaking adventures to guests near and far for nearly 40 years. In that time, more than 100,000 paddlers have set out with Outdoor Odysseys expert guides as they explore the amazing waterscapes of Puget Sound in the most intimate setting. All trips include farm to campfire cuisine.
Nice.
That's cool. And an unwavering commitment to stewardship, sustainability, preservation, and education.
It's a nice area to paddle. If anybody's, you know, wanting to do a safe but interesting ocean paddling experience. Like I spent quite a few years out on Vancouver Island, Victoria, Souk area. And so it's, you're not exposed to the big water of the sea. You got the Olympic Mountains of Washington in the Puget Sound area along Vancouver Island and Wanifuka Strait. It's really nice area to paddle sea kayak. It's, you're protected. There's a lot of shipping, of course, ferries and whatever, but it's a nice area to go. So if you want to go out and do a vacation, these guys would be perfect for it.
What if you want to take your family?
Yeah,
San Juan Islands and off grid, so to speak, no outside contact.
That's perfect.
And you want to listen to your kids whine?
No, but there's so much to see and do.
But this is how you get them back.
Yes, I don't think you'd hear whining.
No.
From my experience paddling these waters, it's very serene, very nice.
When we would take our kids out when they were younger, if we were at a designated campground, like we were trailer camping, they wanted their gadgets.
Oh, yeah.
If we were backcountry, really didn't. They wanted later in the evening, they wanted to listen to a bit of music or something.
Oh, okay.
So their headphones with.
Learn to play a guitar.
But, I mean, if that's the worst of it, is they want to listen to some of their music, you know, to wind down, help wind down for the day.
Yeah.
Then, you know, they're not on the phones.
They're not,
They're actually present.
They're not texting, messaging, and watching videos. And
Yeah. All that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, check them out. March. More than 100 delegates gathered in China for the inaugural 2025 International Canoe Federation Paddle Summit in Hangzhou, China. Landmark event bringing together representatives from all 10 ICF paddling disciplines aimed to build a collective vision for the sport's future. This is the inaugural one. You figure they would have been doing something beforehand.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what they're... With the purpose of this is just to create a future plan for all the various sports.
So the 10, para canoe, canoe sprint, canoe slalom, canoe polo, canoe freestyle, stand-up paddling, canoe ocean racing, canoe marathon, wild water canoeing, and dragon boating.
Big mix.
Mm-hmm. It was the first time that all of the ICF standing committees had held meetings in one location, leading to representatives from the different disciplines sharing views and experiences for the betterment of paddle sports. Now, I know there's a lot of people, a lot of groups do the Zoom meetings as opposed to everybody meeting in one location.
Yeah.
But I think there's still something to be said for face-to-face, in-person meetings, right? The summit, building on the ICF's Fit for Future Evolution strategy, focused on key areas such as sustainability, venue development, event delivery, and competition calendars. Some key takeaways reported back included the ICF is set to significantly expand its workforce with the opening of offices in Hungary and China, promising increased support for all disciplines, particularly in competition management. ICF aims to broaden its scope beyond competitions by actively supporting recreational paddling and enhancing its communication channels. and the ICF will adopt a more proactive approach to competition bids, directly engaging with federations.
Mm-hmm.
Summit's outcomes are poised to shape the future of paddling globally. ICF's commitment to expansion, sustainability, and broader engagement signals a promising future for the sport. But you have to do that. You have to get together. If you're a big world organization like this,
yes.
you yeah. have to get together and bring everybody together and share your ideas and your plans to make something cohesive. Because everybody's, you got all those resources that then can come together
help
each other.
When you talk about, so when the ICF gets involved in stuff like this, they're tapping into various countries. Some of them have a deep well of money
mm-hmm.
because a lot of these, they want to compete internationally. We're talking ultimately Olympics, but with international competitions, if you can increase interest, increase the competition, increase the, it's all about, getting more money into the system. You get more people interested, more people competing. There's more commercial money and more, government money.
Well, there's also, there's more than just money. It's sharing ideas on how to do things. Like if you got somebody, a country out there that wants to hold, say, big canoe freestyle competition,
mm-hmm.
then you got all these other people there that can tell, oh, this is how you want to do it. This is how you want to build your areas to do it,
yeah.
your popularity of it within the, the participation, stuff like that, so that down the road, they will be able to do that sort of thing. You're drawing on all these people and
exactly.
And, then you find out, hey, well, you guys have done this. Can we come and visit and do that sort of thing? And what did you find helped to get these events
exactly.
in your country yeah. sort of deal, right?
Share resources, yeah. get more interest. And my cynical thought behind it again is the financial part of it. Because
everything's financial.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was my point that I tried to make earlier is that's why China's into this. It's to help create this interest and everybody wants medals. Everybody wants to go and mm-hmm. get medals at the Olympics and stuff like that. And when you're a big powerhouse like China for sports and the Olympics, it's if you can increase interest competition and other competition between and cooperation between countries for sport, then that's where you get a lot more people in it. A lot more money in it.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
It won't survive without the money.
No. But the main thing is getting that interest.
Right? Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
CF President Thomas Konietzko said the outcome of these discussions proves very clearly that it was the right decision to bring all committees and partners together here in Hangzhou. And we owe that to everyone's participation. There were a lot of cross-committee meetings where members were able to benefit from these different experiences, and these discussions have shown how much potential we have as a group and as a sport. We have so many clever minds in our global paddling community that we need to utilize these special skills to realize our own great potential. Everyone who has participated has played a big part in the success of the first Paddle Summit. So it's good that they're all getting out there and sharing ideas
and
coming together. Like I say, I still find that there's more benefit to meeting in person, face-to-face,
yes.
than over those Zooms. And I mean, Zoom, getting together with 20 people over a Zoom call is a lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
But
how old is the ICF, International Canoe Federation?
Oh, I have no idea.
Because I'm surprised something like this hasn't happened
I think
sooner.
They just do a lot of the Zoom stuff and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised they haven't done something like this sooner. Like a large organization like this, getting all the countries together and all the delegates. And mm-hmm. so it's good that it started, but I'm just surprised it hasn't already been a thing.
Yeah. Well, they started. It's number one down, number two to come.
Yes.
Oh, I just had a thought there. I thought I missed something. But
don't hurt yourself.
Yeah. Oh, my ears. All that steam coming out. You like the Adirondacks.
I do.
Registration is open for the 2025 Adirondack Paddling Symposium, June 13th to 16th in Saranac Lake.
This is the first I've heard of it. Do you know how many years this has been going?
Nope. I've just heard about it this year, too.
Saranac Lake is just slightly northeast of Lake Placid.
Lake Placid. Yep. Presented by NRS and the Northern Forest Canoe Trail, the symposium is a comprehensive weekend of paddling instruction for beginners and intermediates. Includes course tracks for kayaks, pack boats, and canoes. Harriettstown Town Hall in downtown Saranac Lake serves as the symposium's headquarters. Working with paddlers to help them develop their skills has been a joy to our team, says NFCT trustee Danny Mongno, who is also field marketing manager at NRS. Our symposium is designed to help folks feel safe and confident on the water, maximizing their enjoyment and hopefully leading to more adventures. Now, that's what we used to say about the canoe symposium, the Kitchener-Waterloo mm-hmm. canoe symposium, was do you make it an extra day? You have all the speeches and everything one day, the presentations, but then you get people out on the water. And then you'd have to hold it a yeah. little bit later.
You'd have to hold it in the summer.
Yeah, you're not holding yeah. it in April or
yeah.
anything like that. But that's always been the thing is you make it a two-day event. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Symposium begins Friday, June 13th with introductions, meet and greet, gear outfitting, dinner, evening programming. Additional instruction takes place Saturday and Sunday, June 14th to 15th with optional tours on Monday, June 16th. So you could turn that into a four-day thing.
Yes, because it's more function. It's more fit for function. Mm-hmm. It reminds me. So the one that Kevin Callan went to, I think in Scotland, was that in Wales?
Yeah.
Was that a symposium as well, or was that a purpose?
I think they call
one?
That a symposium.
Yeah,
and it changes locations every couple okay. of years or something like
yeah.
that. Yeah. But yeah, they do the same sort of thing. They have in the evenings, they have some presentations yep. and stuff.
Activities
and then
on the
during
water.
The day, it's all
yeah.
water activities, learning. Mm-hmm. But it's also a lot of like, how to start fires and how to cook over.
Yes.
That sort of thing too.
Exactly.
Right? Instruction takes place on land in the pool at North Country Community College and in area water bodies, including Lower Saranac Lake, the Saranac River, Lake Colby, and Lake Flower. Adirondack Paddling Symposium is presented by NRS and the NFCT, sponsored by Aquabound, Bending Branches, Winona, and Werner Paddles. Community partners include the town of Harriettstown, Celebrate Paddling ADK, Explore Adirondack Frontier, and Bitters and Bones. Additional support is provided by local outfitters and retailers, Adirondack Lakes and Trail Outfitters, St. Regis Canoe Outfitters, Max Canoe Livery, Racket River Outfitters, and Hornbeck Boats. There's a lot of people that come together to put this thing
yeah.
on.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, sounds pretty cool. June 13th to 16th. More information, including registration, details on lodging, courses, gear rentals, and more, visit AdirondackPaddlingSymposium.com. The Adirondack Paddling Symposium takes place during Celebrate Paddling ADK, a month-long festival featuring presentations and discussions at local establishments, river cleanups, and paddling activities on nearby waters.
This is huge.
Yeah. To learn more about for a full schedule activities, visit CelebratePaddlingADK.com.
How have I only just heard about this now for the first time?
Maybe you've been too busy
in a cave,
surfing for other
rock?
Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Trying to figure out how you get water stuff in the bottom of your basement cave. Adirondack Paddling Symposium, June 13th
That's
to
16th. That's super interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
What are you doing in June?
Yeah, I know, right?
June.
Mid-June.
If there's paddling down there, that might fit into my paddle every weekend thing.
There you go.
Interesting. When are you buying a pack raft?
It's hard to justify. Unless I'm actually going to use it a lot.
So use it a lot.
They're not cheap.
What's stopping you?
Because I don't know that I'd use it a lot.
Why not?
Because I'm busy with, like, the time that I do have, I go canoeing and kayaking.
Pack rafting.
Do we have some place that we could go?
Ah, you could go anywhere.
Because the built for purpose idea is like, ideally you'd want to pop into a location by float plane. You're limited in how many watercraft you get, but if you have inflatable watercraft that you could pop into a river somewhere, Nahani, for example, and
The Gani. Float your fanny down the Gani, baby.
I think we already missed that, didn't we?
No, they canceled it. I think they canceled it because of the water, or there was a bridge repair.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, something like that. Or did we? No, that was last year.
No, I think it's still a go this year. I saw something online recently, but I think it's already happened. Not sure.
I don't know. There's too many things going on nowadays, man. Now you got to look it up.
Yeah.
Float your fanny down there. Because it's usually May, isn't it?
I don't know.
It's beginning of May. So it hasn't happened yet this year. No, last year there was issues because they were doing construction around a bridge and they had to skip around a part and they had to start it or end it lower or above a certain point. That was a whole year ago now. Anyway, you need to buy yourself a pack raft.
Do I?
Yes.
Well, you buy one and I'll borrow it.
No, I'm saving up to go to Japan, apparently. Alpaca Raft, industry leader in pack rafting, has partnered with Immersion Research, industry leader in kayak spray skirts, to introduce the Immersion Research 6-mile skirt so you won't get wet from the waist down. New spray skirt combines a kayak-proven neoprene tunnel, neoprene casing, and high-tension full bungee with a pack raft-compatible hybrid nylon and neoprene deck to meet the growing demands of pack rafting capabilities and the advancing paddler skill set. See? You're falling behind, Derek. You need a pack raft.
Float your fannies in 2 weeks.
See, I knew it wasn't here yet.
Oh! It's on April 12th. 25.
Okay. We should go check that out this year.
Mm-hmm. We say that every year.
Yeah, well, every year we're at the Canoe Symposium.
Oh, yes, it's not this year.
Right?
No more canoes.
Oh, yeah. There's also Salus has its big sale the same weekend.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, which we never go to because we're at the Canoe Symposium.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Oops. What is that?
Oh, stop it.
Today's interruption brought to you by Derek.
My tile in my wallet. I moved my butt and I pinched my tile thing and it rang my phone.
Oh, your locator thing, so you know where you are at all times.
Exactly.
I know where you are.
It's been going off like today a couple times. Every time I sat in the car and it went off and got out of the car, it went off. Maybe I broke it.
Maybe just stop sitting on it.
It's in my wallet.
Take your wallet out of your pocket.
And
even
if the phone's on mute, it will still ring. So my phone's on mute. My phone's always on mute. It never rings.
It's you, isn't it?
It's the
just
tile.
You.
It's the tile.
It's you. At Alpaca, innovation is the core of everything we do. The spray skirt is one of the most critical components of a whitewater setup, says Thor Tingji, CEO and co-founder of Alpaca Raft. We're also big believers in collaboration, especially when we can team up with another industry leader with shared values. Immersion Research has spent decades perfecting spray skirt technology for kayaks, and together we've developed a skirt that offers the best combination of functionality, durability, and ease of use for serious pack rafters. You need a pack raft.
I would like to get one.
Collaboration between Alpaca Raft and Immersion Research brought together two companies with a shared goal: to create the most innovative spray skirt ever built for the evolving pack rafter. And drawing on Alpaca's deep understanding of pack raft design and IR's expertise in skirt construction and fit, the teams developed a unique skirt that allows a kayak-style casing and bungee to fit on Alpaca's breakdown and packable cockpit and rim design. So that's pretty cool if you can get somebody else to collaborate.
Yes.
I mean, this is what they do. Then it's perfect. It just makes sense to get them in there, right?
I first thought about doing a bike packing trip. We've read about it. Yeah,
you just have to have a bike that you can take the wheels off.
Yeah, which I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
Not your motorcycle.
That would make it a lot easier.
Right? A lot heavier. yeah, that's the problem around here is there's places to use a pack, but nothing big.
No.
Nothing that you could do for a few days.
No, definitely you'd have to head up to a little farther north.
There's probably spots you could do it in Algonquin, Temagami.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff.
Yeah. Well, you could go to, there's a lot of areas like up near MKC and stuff and up near Barry's Bay and.
Well, the other thing you could do is if you took your canoe into the top of the waterfall route in Temagami.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then you stashed your canoe, and then you did the pack raft all through the route.
Yeah.
And then just circle around back up to grab your canoe.
Yeah.
And then paddle back out. Yeah. You just got to be...
That'd work.
Think outside the box when it all, right? Or have somebody drop you off at the top.
Yes.
And then a week later meet you down at the bottom.
Exactly, yeah. The problem is any flat water, it's not really good navigating with the pack raft.
Yeah, but you've done the waterfall route with Mike and Willow.
Yes.
You'd be able to take a pack raft down there.
You could. Absolutely, yeah. You could. But there are large sections of flat water. And
there's enough current that will carry you through.
What would be good is we talked about it last year and the year before. There's in Quebec, there's the lower end, I think, the Des Moines.
Yeah, remember the Des Moines.
The hiking route. You can hike up and pack raft back down.
And pack raft back down.
So there is
spaces over here. You don't have to be in Colorado. Yeah.
No, no.
Or exactly. The Rockies.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right? So. Six Mile Skirt aims to bridge the gap in packraft innovation and paddler progression by providing the driest, properly fitting spray skirt for those seeking to explore more whitewater paddling opportunities. Benchmark in performance and safety for the advancing Class 3, 4, 4 plus paddler, while being an ideal investment for those beginning their progression into Class 2 and 3 whitewater. 6 Mile Skirt is made with a sized neoprene tunnel, heavy-duty nylon deck, stretchy neoprene corners to fit over the paddler's knees, and a full neoprene casing and bungee to fit over the pack raft's deck rim. High-tension bungee provides greater implosion resistance, which is a good thing, when running harder white water. While the specialized neoprene casing provides an easy experience when putting the spray skirt onto and off of the rim of the pack raft, additionally, silicone grips on the underside and 1.5 mil neoprene corner panels help keep the skirt in place and accommodate a variety of paddler sizes. That's a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is because not everybody is the same size, shape.
No, exactly. You know, yeah.
That sort of thing. A reliable spray skirt isn't just about keeping you dry. It's a key piece of safety gear, says John Weld, co-founder and president of Immersion Research. We've spent years fine-tuning our bungee skirts to provide the best possible fit and retention. And by bringing that technology to pack rafting with Alpaca, we've created a skirt that offers a superior seal while remaining easy to use in the field. 6 Mile Skirt is a game changer for paddlers pushing the limits of whitewater pack rafting. Designed for high performance pack rafting, the 6 Mile Skirt is recommended for Alpaca's Mage and Valkyrie models, where maximum water resistance and retention are essential for running technical whitewater. See, this is why you need this. For paddlers seeking a lightweight alternative, Alpaca continues to offer the ultralight skirt, which is best suited for models like Refuge, Caribou, Mule, and Expedition. 6 Mile Skirt is now available at alpacaraft.com. So, like I say, I mean, you don't have the whitewater canoe anymore, right? So this gets you out there.
It would. So, and I've talked with Martin Garster about this a couple times. And so the route that I was thinking, it's on the lower Des Moines. It's basically a 3-day hike from the Ottawa River up the Tote Road Trail. And so there's various camps. We were invited to join them on the grand opening of the Tote Road Trail camp.
Yeah, route. We weren't around.
Yeah, we couldn't make it. You were off on a trip somewhere and whatever. Anyways, so this is on the Lower Des Moines. It's called the Tote Road Trail. It's and you can hike and pack raft the route. It's so you hike from the Ottawa River up the Tote Road Trail to the Grand Chute, then you take your pack raft, inflate it, and then you paddle back down to the Ottawa River again. Do you remember? So I remember seeing this a year or two ago. Do you know when we did the last the Hamilton Symposium? And we met the Saluk 46 guy with all the ultralight equipment.
Yep.
So he's got a video online, and he does it's like a hour long YouTube video where he does this hike. He pops in. He's got a pack raft. He hikes up the Tote Road Trail up to Grand Chute, and then he paddles down, and it's not too terrible a whitewater route. There's a couple times where it looks like he was going to be in trouble, but it was an interesting route. So it took him 3 days up and basically an afternoon back, just floating down the Des Moines River back to the Ottawa River. So it's a nice route, and that's a easy route to get to, an easy route to do. I keep trying to find somebody to join up. I don't want to do it solo, but so far only Martin Garster has been interested in doing something like this. He said he was going to do it himself last year, but I don't know that he ever got around to doing it.
Yeah, that kind of rings a bell.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said they were going to do it.
Yeah.
But hey, see, get yourself a pack raft. And
they're like $1,800 bucks.
You got to be able to rent one somewhere, though.
Yeah, if I pop a hole in it, yeah, I guess I bought it now.
That's what insurance is for. you buy the
rental insurance.
Yeah, the rental insurance.
Yeah, bring some patches.
And you got to think if other people are doing it.
In absolutely.
Class 4+. Yeah,
sure.
Then you got to be good, right?
Well, that's key. You got to be good. I'm not good. I've never been in one. Yeah.
Got to start somewhere. Didn't say you had to do class 4.
Yeah.
You start at 2. Work your way up.
Yeah. But yeah, it'll be
100-foot waterfalls.
Well, why don't we do that? Why don't we get some pack rafts and we'll do this route?
I don't do whitewater. What's this wee business?
Oh, you wuss.
You're the one that took all the training.
And you said you're going to take the training.
Eventually. I'm not 70 yet, so I'm saving up for my 70th birthday. All the good stuff is out there, buddy.
It is, absolutely.
Episode 461.
What episode is this?
We talked about the two gents going from Ireland to Istanbul.
Today's 476.
Yeah, today's 476.
Yeah. Oh, this guy. Yes, yes.
Yeah, these two guys.
Didn't they get blocked because of the off-season?
So I wanted to do a quick update about this comedy of errors. September 2024, Johnny Coyne and Liam Cotter of Ireland, both 24, began their ambitious 5,000-kilometer kayaking journey from Dublin to Istanbul. It has taken them across the Irish Sea, the English Channel, without support vessels, followed by tricky navigation through European rivers and canals, 4,000 kilometers behind them. Their finish line is now almost in sight. They decide they're going to, paddle from Ireland to Istanbul.
I forgot about these guys.
Now, I've been following along. Among the many challenges over the past 7 months, their support vessel pulled out just hours before crossing the heavily trafficked English Channel, so they had to go it alone. Tried paddling the French canals, but didn't have a permit.
Oh.
So they were banned from the water. By the time their paperwork was in order and they could restart, the waterways were frozen. Undeterred, they put their kayaks on wheels, dragged them for 350 kilometers across country.
Wow.
Then more bureaucratic issues on Germany's canals forced them to trek, kayaks and all, through the Black Forest to the source of the Danube.
So they're not on a kayak trip.
Now it's a hike.
It's a portaging trip.
But they were you're only allowed to paddle the canals from certain month to certain month.
Oh.
So they arrived after certain month.
Outside of the tour season, yeah. Into the commercial season.
Mm-hmm. Throughout it all, the Irish duo has shown relentless optimism, dismissing the many obstacles as just part of the experience. Coyne said the hardest part has been the long sea crossings, particularly the 12-hour crossing of the channel.
Oh.
We always say the hardest part is over, and then it just gets harder.
Okay, the hard part's on. Oh, no.
Oh, crap. In Germany, the duo morphed into a trio. Fellow Irishman Ryan Fallow, 24 as well, has joined the ranks and is sticking with them all the way to Istanbul. By February, they had covered over 1,900 kilometers, reached the Danube, and followed it into Austria. First few days on the Danube were great fun, and with current and occasional rapids, they covered around 50 kilometers a day. Then in some white water, a rock hit Cotter's boat and put a hole in it. Improbably, they found someone nearby who could fix it for them. When another man arrived to help with the repair, he offered Fallow another kayak to replace his old one with little storage. They took to the Danube again. Days later, during a long portage, Cotter fell and hurt his shoulder. He tried kayaking with his arm in a sling, but it didn't work so well,
at all.
And he had to drop out. Three or two again. They followed the Danube through Austria, then kayaked through Slovakia and Hungary. 6 months after setting off, they entered Croatia. More drama ensued almost as soon as they arrived in their ninth country. During their first night in Croatia, they woke up to police around their kayaks. They had to convince them they were not illegal immigrants.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you got to think of what you look like when you're on a long trip right?
Yeah.
You know. The boys were allowed to continue, but they were told that they had to get a Serbian passport stamp. This is because they were paddling past Liberland, a patch of disputed land between the two countries.
Oh.
Police boat followed them the entire way. After coming back into Croatia, they went into
two
town.
Two became six.
After coming back to Croatia, they went into town for lunch, but were arrested. They had not stamped back into Croatia. After a few hours and €130 fine each, they were released. But wait.
There's more.
They kayak every day, but also explore the towns and villages they pass. Often local people offer them a place to stay. Sometimes they crash in fire stations. Most of the time they simply camp on a riverbank with the coming of spring, where this has become far more enjoyable, although the winds and the water have picked up. If you follow their Instagram, they show them stopping at fire halls and stuff like that, meeting people and everything.
In handcuffs and everything?
Continuing down the Danube through Serbia, they woke up one morning to find the water level had risen far more than they expected, washing their kayaks away overnight.
Oh, wow.
Luckily, they found them slightly further downriver. Someone had spotted the boats on the water and pulled them ashore. Strong winds then forced them to pull up on the Romanian side of the river. Once again, they had not had their passport stamped and were arrested. After a night in jail, they were released. They will now paddle down the remainder of the river to the Black Sea, where they will follow the coast to Istanbul. Or so they think.
Yes.
We will continue to follow this.
After so many times getting arrested, it'd just be like, meh. Room and board for the night. I got a bed to sleep on.
Prison this way? Okay, thank you.
So they visit local community jails all across Europe.
Right? It's the paddling canal and prison tour.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't been following them, so I didn't know anything. I forgot about them.
And the fact that apparently the authorities have nothing better to do than watch the shorelines for anybody jumping up on the shore.
So I'm wondering how much they do keep an eye
out. I got to think because there's a war.
There's a lot of migration and stuff, but maybe there's also word of mouth. Hey, there's a couple kayakers coming your way.
Right? Hey, who's looking for something to do today? There's a couple kayakers coming in town soon.
It's a slow weekend. Let's go arrest some kayakers.
Anybody got some permits to
So the thing is,
they got to get up on the quotas.
You'd have to have some sort of logistics person to arrange. It's okay, when you reach this bridge on this road, be aware that you're going to have to walk in and hit the border patrol and say, "Yeah, I need my passport stamped."
Right,
and then you jump in the case. So somebody's going to have to plan ahead. But if you're just winging it is like, oh, look at that. We got arrested again.
Yeah.
Hey, boys.
I mean, pretty lucky so far that,
yeah,
they haven't been turned around or turned back.
Well, lucky they didn't completely lose their kayaks. Like,
yeah.
Like, lucky somebody saw them and pulled them ashore. It's like, huh. And why were their kayaks not tied?
Hey,
wind comes up and they got washed away. It's like, hey, let's tie these to a tree.
Yeah. That's like paddle trip 101.
Make sure that
you lash your boats up for the evening.
Like, I'm pretty sure I could lash my boat up for the night. I don't have any experience getting arrested, so that might be a new one for me.
That's only because we ran fast. Actually, when we went to Camp 41.
Oh, yeah, Camp 30.
Or Camp 30.
Camp 30.
Camp 30.
Yeah.
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 That was only...
What are you doing, boys?
A reminder on my socials came up.
I keep seeing pictures come up, too.
Like a month ago or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a very early spring.
Because we ran too fast.
We were just standing there by the truck when the police came up.
Hey, what do you guys do? Nothing? nothing at all. Why do you ask, officer?
We're doing photography. Yeah.
Couple of 45-year-old guys.
What are you guys doing?
Running from the popo. To continue on, follow-ups. Hurricane Helene.
Oh, yes.
Big, bad Hurricane Helene. A little bit of follow-up on a couple of things here. The area around Newport, Tennessee is rebuilding 6 months since the area was devastated by Hurricane Helene. Major attraction in the area, rafting companies like Obermountain Whitewater Rafting are among those getting back on their feet. There's big whitewater rafting and everything down there.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
As a community, everybody came together. It didn't matter if we were competitors or not. Everybody is helping everybody. And that made a huge impact, I think, on where we are today and the progress is being made, said Oberrafting Operations Director Lacey Bramlett. Bramlett said of the 11 rafting companies in the area, most sustained some kind of damage from Helene. Typically in a three-month season, we're seeing roughly 200,000 tourists coming to the area to go whitewater rafting. So the rehabilitation of our community and our business models is super important to the local and state economy. And that's one of the things we talked about this one just after it happened.
Yeah.
Was the locals that all have some sort of hand
exactly
in the rafting.
Exactly. Businesses. So if you're living in the area, you tend to be in the business, mm-hmm. in the industry. And we've seen lots of updates since the storm about, them just coming to the realization of the damage that's done. There's new channels, there's new routes, anything that was charted, it's like it's new again. Mm-hmm. So they had to rebuild routes and define where the safe routes are and determine where any hangups were, any trees or roots or stuff that they now expose. So it's a whole new system of water that they had to get used to again, right? And
yep.
all these businesses rebuilding and putting the bones of the business back together again, trying to keep things going.
Property damage.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Progress has been tremendous, but there's still some to go. Interstate 40 is open, but now that adds traffic and things like that to the dynamic of taking a rafting trip. Those are all things that we're navigating on a daily basis, and we're just moving along as quickly and swiftly as we can while also making sure our guests' experience is top-notch. Because, yeah, some of these places that used to be on the riverbank are no longer on the riverbank.
The riverbank is gone.
Some companies have already started their rafting tours. Ober still has a few more months until they can open. However, this year, even for annual rafters, the experience will be brand new. To be in love with something like whitewater rafting, to be kind of your niche in the world and your passion, is really interesting to watch something you love so much change everything around you. But it really showed the power of water, said Bramlett. it made huge topographical changes and the way from Western North Carolina to here, and its historic event that most people are referring to as a thousand-year flood because of the topography and geological changes that happened during that event. She says, because of those changes, the waterways will look and feel different this year, but they will still have family-friendly rafting. By employing nearly 400 people each summer, she also added that not only will the company help bring tourism back, it will also help families in the area. So, yeah, I mean, 400 people employed from that small area is huge, right?
Yeah, and you have to rebuild all those links. Like, we're talking, so these businesses are, the businesses are there, but you're also talking with the local communities with, like, grocery stores and gas stations. And, you know, it's all one big family
beds and
group,
breakfast,
right?
Hotels.
Exactly. So it's all part and parcel to the business and the industry that's in the area. It's a lot of stuff to rebuild.
Well, and you got to also think, like, with all these new rivers, they got to send guides down to map
exactly
the new river. Like, okay, we're coming around
we're
the corner.
Winging it.
Yeah,
we're going to wing it, boys.
That little class two is now class
yeah,
five.
Whatever, yeah.
Or, you know, like, hey, where'd that waterfall come from?
We have lots of sweepers. We have to watch out for roots and rocks. And, yeah, it's like, we're winging it, boys.
Yeah, so there's all that. They got to remap everything.
Exactly.
And you know, they spread all that information between all the companies
because
to keep it safe. And
to keep tourists safe and keep everybody on these trips safe, you have to remap everything.
Well, and like they say, just because you're a competitor, you know, everybody's helping everybody.
You have to.
And that at the end of the day, you have to forget you're a competitor and you're the paddling community.
Correct. And so the more manpower out there remapping, the better. So if you work collaboratively, instead of like you have 20 rafting guides, now suddenly you have 80 rafting guides and everybody's knowing, getting to learn every inch of the river and you get to share the information and the routes. And so, yeah, it's has to be collaborative.
And like they say is if you're coming here year after year, this year, it's going to be totally different.
I know, right?
It's like a brand new location.
Hey, remember that trip we went on last year?
And, you know,
same
there's going to be...
New route.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of comparison. Oh, this part section is so much better than it used to be. And, no, I liked that section before it became this. Sort of, but it's all part of it. Hiking the Appalachian Trail through the Blue Ridge Mountains takes people through thick forests and across grassy mountaintop areas. This year, it also includes a short boat ride.
There you go.
Floodwaters from the remnants of Hurricane Helene took out a bridge over Nolichucky River, severing two sections of the Appalachian Trail near Irwin, Tennessee. Crossing the river required a 3.6-mile detour alongside busy roads just to get to the other side. You're already walking that far. Why do you want to walk another 3.5 miles?
Yes.
Starting this month, hikers can now be ferried across the river in 12-foot rafts. Guides from Wahoo's Adventures carry people over one at a time, replacing an hour or two of walking with a 5-minute ride.
Perfect.
So where it would take you 5 minutes to cross the bridge, now it's going to be 5 minutes to paddle across. It was fantastic. The raft guy was awesome, says Mike Bolduc of Maine, who crossed the river with his daughter last weekend. Definitely made us feel very safe, speedy, made sure we took our backpacks off when we got in the raft in case you fell overboard. Safety first. Just really awesome and so much better than a road walk, especially a detour road walk. More than 430 miles of the Appalachian Trail were closed after Helene blew through the mountains and after tens of thousands of hours of work by volunteers and the National Forest Service, all but 21 miles have been cleared.
That's impressive.
Enough for this year's hiking season.
Wow.
That's a lot of hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Appalachian Trail Conservancy initially mapped out the detour around the missing bridge as well, but the roads are narrow and convoys of dump trucks carrying stone make it a dicey place to walk, says Franklin Tate, Conservancy's associate regional director. A lot of people came back to us and said, the road walk sucks.
We know.
So even though we blazed it and turned it into a feasible walk around, we started thinking we really want another option. Using donations to its Trail Resiliency Fund, the Conservancy hired Wahoo's Adventures to provide the boats and the guides. Owner Slayton Johnson had thought about offering a ferry service last fall after his stepfather, a veteran of the trail, told him that a company uses canoes to carry hikers across a remote stretch of the Kennebec River in Maine. The ferry contract is a lifeline for Wahoo's. The company doesn't expect to have its usual rafting season due to lack of access to national forest land while CSX works on its tracks. CSX is a train.
Yeah.
The ferry may be the only rafting work available on the river this year, Johnson says. River guides, they do mean a lot of our community and to our economy. It's not much, but they're able to work on the river and make a little bit of money. Wahoo guides carry hikers across the river for free, though tipping is highly encouraged.
Yes.
The ferry will run from 9 till 2 every day from now, it's already started, till June 15th when through traffic on the trail falls off considerably.
Then you have to walk around.
Then you're going to have to start walking again. Vast majority of hikers will be heading north across the river on the quest to trek from Georgia to Maine. Says Tate, demand for the ferry will peak April to May. You'll have nights of 50, 60, and 70 people all waiting to get across. While the ferry service will end in June, Johnson at Wahoo's said he hopes it can be revived in September and October for the southbound hikers.
Yeah.
So again, helping the paddling community out there to help the hiking community, and
it's
get a little bit of money in pockets.
It's interesting to follow along to see how the recovery efforts are going following mm-hmm. that big storm. It was a very large, widespread, damaging storm, and to see the groups get together, you know, collaboratively and rebuilding and putting stuff together and getting things running again. Like
I think 430 miles destroyed.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And now they've only got 21 left.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the damage, I imagine, would be just fallen trees, right? So yeah. A lot of the trails were blocked by a lot of trees, so there'd be a lot of chainsaw work and moving the wood into the forest. But then there's areas that would have been washed out or bridges that were washed out. And so
that's what's the case there.
Exactly. So it's nice to see both whitewater rafting and with the trail and stuff. It's coming back. It's being restored.
Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. That's all I got this week.
I've got nothing to add.
Why not?
Because I just talked myself out. And we're over an hour. Hour and 7 minutes so far.
Ah, that's par for the course. any plans coming up?
I have my May trip coming up. It's gotten shortened because one of the guys has a new job at work and he can't get time off.
Oh.
So now it's going to be a long weekend instead of a week-long trip. And we're not doing Algonquin now because it's booked. Any of the areas we want to go is booked. So now we're probably going to Halliburton Highlands. It's morphing, constantly changing.
It's July. Derek is camping in his backyard, just like they used to.
Yeah. Well, we want to get out before the black flies, right? And so it's going to be early May. No bugs, lots of fish. Yeehaw.
Hot day. The guy that doesn't fish...
I can eat fish if anybody else catches them.
Do you not remember a trip we did where you were catching nothing but fish?
And
constantly saying, I don't catch fish.
Yeah, that was weird, eh? I caught a lot of fish that trip.
See?
Nailed it.
Nailed it! Jerk!
I think we released most of them, did we?
Yeah.
I don't know that we actually...
No, we didn't eat any because there was a fire ban on.
Oh,
because
yeah.
They were busy having all the fires in northern Quebec.
Yes. Yeah.
So there was a fire ban on.
Yeah.
And we were fighting with your little maple stove.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I bought a second one.
Yeah. Same brand.
Yeah. I did. Yeah.
Maple. Give it a whirl.
Yeah. They're cheap. It's just, it was wonky. So, anyways.
Yeah. So... Yeah.
What about you? You must, you're just, limiting your.
Yeah, I got to limit everything because we're doing so much, like mm-hmm. I say, 3 weeks straight.
Yeah.
I got some of my clients are looking at me going, what do you mean you're going away for 3 weeks?
Well, I'm going away for 3 weeks.
For 3 weeks, yeah.
Which we have to plan for recording.
So you're going away for 3 weeks in July. I'm going for 3 weeks in August.
August, yeah. You just take the summer off.
Nah. Nah, I don't need you.
I'm gonna. Yeah, you can get guest hosts.
I'm going to get guest hosts that potentially want to take your spot.
Yeah, there you go.
Right? I'll just get a whole bunch of people just to come and.
Give us your applications.
They all have to pretend they're you. And with me is Derek Spesh. Ha! You're sounding rather feminine today.
Yes. Yeah, it should be interesting. Yeah. We can try and record a couple ahead, but otherwise it's going to be guest hosts. And we can't do guest hosts with you away on vacation because I have no idea how to use your recording equipment.
There's computers and screens and headphones and
Sean protects his job by not teaching me how to use the equipment.
I can teach you how to use it, but you want to pack it up and set it at your house.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all packable.
Yes, it is. Well, we've had it in the backcountry.
Right?
I think, what was it, QE2 we were recording, our 300th?
Yeah, that was our 300th episode. Yeah. We're coming up to 500 at the end of the year, too.
I know, it's crazy.
September, October, somewhere in there.
We're 476, so
24 more episodes. Yeah,
6 months. Almost 26 weeks.
Yeah.
So 24 weeks.
Dun, dun, dun.
26 weeks is half a year.
But we're looking at like late September, early October.
Yep. Yep.
Thanksgiving. Canadian Thanksgiving.
We can do the pack rafting trip of the Des Moines and record on the trip. Get a couple special guests.
Glub.
Yeah.
I hate you, Derek!
Let's make sure it's something special. Start planning now.
Welcome to episode 500. Thank you for listening. Good night. It's the shortest episode ever.
5 minutes.
Yeah. We'll get other people to host it for us.
We could. That'd be neat.
Right?
Yeah.
We're taking a week off. You host it.
Kevin and Andy can do an episode. And
oh, could you imagine putting Kevin in charge of the microphone? Kevin Callan, host of this week's episode. Good Lord.
Yes.
You'd be half in a bag before it starts.
I can. You're mimicking his accent pretty good there.
I know, eh? Alrighty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Just go in there and Google it and you'll find us. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.